Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
America, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Reverberations from Charleston continue to resound all across the United States. Those who claim they didn't know why a disturbed 21-year-old would possibly walk into a church and shoot a bunch of people at Bible study. Was it anti-Christian? Some idiot asked on Fox News? No, it's what we always said it was. It was racism, pure and simple. It's actually worse than racism. The killer, whose name I don't need to say and won't say, I've, by the way, tried, sometimes I forget, but I've tried really hard ever since Newtown and Aurora and Columbine and Virginia Tech and, well, the list goes on and on, not to give the killer's name just because, to me, he's just a killer. He's a thug. He's a terrorist. His name isn't worthy of being spoken. We never heard of him before he did this murder, and I don't care for this murder to be the reason we speak of him later. So I'll just talk of the terrorist, the thug, the racist. You can pick your term. I choose not to use his name. When the thug, the terrorist, walked into Mother Emanuel, the AME church that is one of the oldest black churches in the United States, a church that dates back to the early part of the 19th century when Denmark Vesey actually helped to do a slave rebellion out of that church that was later burned to the ground. And then black churches were made illegal in South Carolina until the end of the Civil War, when the church in 1865 was rebuilt and has stood proudly ever since. When the killer walked into that church, he knew where he was going. He knew what he was doing. He went into that church precisely because that church has stood as a beacon for freedom in American history, and particularly in African American history. He said he would do what he set out to do. He wanted to go in and kill a bunch of black people. He wanted to start a race war. His goal was to cause black and white to turn on each other. He even said, before beginning his massacre of helpless people, he talked about you, meaning black men, I suppose, raping our women, before he shot a bunch of black women and children. It's not that any of this makes any sense. Terrorist acts rarely do. But it is important that we call it what it is. I was on air on a local news channel just last weekend. You can watch it on my website at marklevinetalk.com. And the real discussion was guns, and we're going to talk more about guns tomorrow. I still believe that it is easy access to guns that helps terrorists like this thug succeed. But the conservative I was debating kept trying to change the topic, kept trying to, believe it or not, in the midst of this horror. And I call it horror rather than tragedy. To me, a tragedy, I don't know, I think of Shakespeare. I think of something that where good people did the wrong thing and everything went sour. That's a tragedy. This was evil. This was, I guess, tragic. It was worse than that, though. It was horrific. It was evil. Anyway, he tried to minimize the evil by suggesting that this murderer, his crimes were no worse than any other murderer. That hate crimes are no worse than any other crime. And let me tell you this. I am, personally, I don't talk about this too much, but I have on the air before. I am personally a survivor of murder. Not of me. My sister was murdered in 1996 by her husband. My parents. There was a hit out on my parents by this same man who thankfully is now serving a 56-year sentence in Tennessee. My sister was killed, and this man tried to kill my parents. It was awful. It was terrible. It was murder. It was not a hate crime, although there was plenty of hate involved. I, as a victim, see the difference between someone who is killing an individual for whatever sick purposes that murderer has, and someone who's trying to kill an entire community. Someone who is attacking an entire race, an entire ethnicity, an entire religion, an entire sexual orientation. This terrorist went in with a political motivation. He wanted race war. He didn't go in because he knew the people he killed. He went in because he didn't know the people he killed. He didn't kill someone whom he had a beef with. Not that there's ever any justification for murder. There isn't. He went into people whom he had this theoretical beef with, that he'd been taught to hate, that he had done videos and Facebook posts sitting with his gun and his Confederate flag, battle flag, I should say, bragging about how he was going to gun down a bunch of black people. It's interesting. I've been asked, what is the difference between a hate crime and a terrorist act? I'm not sure there is a big difference. That's why I can call him a killer, a murderer, a thug, a terrorist. All these terms are basically interchangeable for me. A terrorist murders innocent people in order to achieve some political objective. A hate criminal murders innocent people in order to achieve some political objective. That objective being hate, destruction. This killer wanted a race war. He'd been taught in the first state in the United States to withdraw from the Union in 1860, a state that actually threatened to withdraw in Andrew Jackson's day in the 1830s, in the state where the first shots were fired in the Civil War at Fort Sumter, in a state that, like one other state in the United States, Mississippi, flies the Confederate battle flag at its state house. Now, the Confederate battle flag is not the Confederate flag. If you thought it was, check your history books. The Confederate flag, the flag that flew over the Confederate capital, whether it was in Alabama or when it was later moved to Richmond, Virginia, was not that flag, the Southern Cross. It was a fairly ordinary flag, sometimes referred to as the Stars and Bars. It had 13 stars for the 13 supposed states of the Confederacy. There were really only 11. Two that they hoped would join never really did in Missouri and in Kentucky, although they did send representatives down there. But the 13 stars represent the 13 states of the supposed Confederacy. I guess they wanted to copy the 13 original colonies of the American Revolution. And they're, in order to make it different from the American flag, they couldn't have 13 stripes. So they had three red and white stars and bars. The flag never caught on, really. It did was the Confederate flag. Barely anyone remembers it today. It's amazing how aesthetics matters, even with regard to, well, to Confederacy. Because somebody in the Northern Virginia Army, around 1863, when the Civil War was more than half over, decided that in battle, the Southern Cross, tilted on its side, had a lot more power and designed a more interesting flag. That was the battle flag. That was the flag that was used in battle for the Confederacy. And when did the battle flag first fly over the South Carolina State House? Was it during the Civil War? A few years after? Maybe when those Jim Crow laws started? No. Started in 1961. Prior to 1961, South Carolina had a pleasant little tree. Did not have the battle flag. It started precisely because the United States Supreme Court had ordered southern states to desegregate their schools. It was done as a sign of resistance, not to Abraham Lincoln, but to John F. Kennedy, to the Warren Court, to 20th century America, to actually allowing blacks to vote 100 years after we promised them we would allow them to vote with our constitutional amendments. It's hardly sacred. And it flew over the state capitol dome until 2000, when a compromise was made and it was removed to a Confederate War Memorial. Well, it's still on the Capitol grounds. It still flies up there. In fact, Democrats suggested it could fly in the back where it wouldn't be seen very much. There's another place to put it. It's still pretty front and center. It's good that it's not on top of the State House anymore. But it's still a flag of racism and hatred. And yes, Southern pride. Because some of Southern pride is built on racism and hatred. And I understand people who have Southern pride. I am a Southerner myself. I am from Nashville, Tennessee. There was a time when I didn't understand the hateful elements of that flag. And certainly generations before me didn't, but no one should misunderstand it now. You know, people who watched the Dukes of Hazzard as a kid and saw it on the back of their car were probably thinking rebel Southerners, like rebel to authority, not like racist lynching slaveholders. But everyone knows what the flag means now, or should know what the flag means now. It is time for the flag to come down. And news break. News announcement. At 4 p.m. Eastern Time today, Governor Nikki Haley of South Carolina, accompanied by Senator Lindsey Graham, both Republicans, are expected to call for removal of the flag. Now, they have resisted this. Yeah, there you go. They have resisted this before, both of them, because the people of South Carolina have resisted this, and being politicians, they wanted to be where their people are. And I got to give credit where credit is due. With all this discussion of removing the flag and all these people coming on Fox News, conservatives defending the Confederate flag, it was Mitt Romney. That's right, Mitt Romney, last year's Republican nominee, who was the first prominent Republican to call for the flag to be removed. Now, Democrats have called for the flag to be removed for decades. But Mitt Romney did it, and let's face it, when you're on the national stage running for president, and I don't know if this would have happened 10 years ago when one year ago when Lindsey Graham was not running for president. But when you're running for president, you've got to appeal to a national audience, and the national audience says that the place for a Confederate flag is in a museum. That's where it belongs. I am curious to know what you think about all this. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. At 4 o'clock Eastern Time in just 35 minutes, it is expected that Governor Nikki Haley, joined by both Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator Tim Scott, one of two African Americans serving in the United States Senate, this one being a Republican who was appointed, in fact, to his office and then won in a special election. They're all three going to call for removing the flag. that's the kind of thing that I think will get the South Carolina legislature to actually do so. Good for Governor Mitt Romney, who was not running for president, to make the first call and for people to follow. It's interesting, when the other presidential candidates were asked first, Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, they all said, it's not our business. I'm not a South Carolinian, Santorum said. This is a decision that needs to be made here in South Carolina. Not an issue for someone running for president, Mike Huckabee said. Yeah, well, now the South Carolinians are calling for it.
Wait, that's not an issue, but for Mike Huckabee, the way Beyonce dances is an issue?
Yes, because the way Beyonce dances is a federal issue in the Constitution.
Wow.
Whereas the keeping the union together is not that important. Beyonce's hips are more important than the Civil War, Mark. Keep your priorities straight. In any case, if you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Let's go to John in Santa Fe on line 5. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm just fine. What do you think about hate crime laws in general?
I support them.
Why?
Why? Because I think...
I have a problem with the idea of a hate crime, because hate's, you could say it's emotion or loosely a thought, and it kind of bleeds into the Orwellian idea of thought crime.
Maybe, John, you don't know what a hate crime law does. There is not a single hate crime law in the nation that punishes mere speech. If you preach hatred, you cannot be put in jail. That's unconstitutional. It's a violation of the First Amendment. If, however, you preach hatred and then act on that hatred, yes, that's a hate crime law, and it's more severe. And I'll just give you a couple examples, John, to think about. We're going to take a break soon, and then I want you to think about it and come back to me. Let me give you a couple examples. One example, the difference between burning leaves on your neighbor's lawn, which is a crime. You shouldn't do that. It's arson. You shouldn't be burning property on someone else's lawn, and burning a cross on your neighbor's lawn. I'll give you another example.
Okay.
Writing "John loves Mary" in spray paint on your neighbor's house, which is a crime. It's vandalism. You shouldn't be doing that. And writing "swastika, kill all the Jews" on a synagogue. Same spray paint, same amount of damage, a horrifically different message. There's a huge difference between people who commit what could be run-of-the-mill everyday crimes against, which are, you know, we don't want people burning things on our yards. We don't want people spray painting our houses. And people who are trying to send a message, and the message is, when you burn a cross on your black neighbor's lawn, the message is, get out, be afraid, you're in danger, we're going to kill you, we want all of your kind out, all of that said with a simple message of a cross. Now, I want to know, John, if you see a difference between those crimes that I just mentioned. Tell you what, we're going to take a break. I'm going to let John answer that question after the break, because I know he's going to want to do it at length. Hate crimes are not just crimes, folks. They are crimes, they are threats, they are warnings. If you threaten to kill someone in America, that is a crime. You can't just do that. And when you do a hate crime, you're not only committing violence, you're threatening to do more. But I do want to hear John's response. Maybe I convinced him. We'll find out. If you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK. We'll be back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levin. The voice of reason in an unreasonable world. Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. John from Santa Fe has called in and asked me whether I support hate crimes laws. I said I do, and he asked me to explain the difference between a hate crime and an ordinary crime, and I gave a couple of examples. One is drawing a swastika on a synagogue. One is burning a cross on your black neighbor's lawn. And I'll give you a third one. The third one's when a guy buys a gun, says he's going to kill a bunch of people, and happens to be waving a Confederate flag or has flags there of apartheid South Africa and apartheid Rhodesia. To me, that suggests your penchant for violence and for danger and for attacking a whole group of people than someone who just threatens to kill people, which, by the way, is also a crime. All right, I've spoken at length, John. Let me hear your views.
Well, what's the difference between murdering somebody What's the difference between a hate crime murder and a regular murder? That's what I don't get, what you're trying to...
You mean in terms of punishment?
Yeah, I mean, it's both...
Well, murders, I mean, like depending on where you live, both may have the death penalty. So you're right that murder alone is a severe enough crime, first-degree murder, that there may not be a real difference in penalty, although oftentimes the federal government can get involved if it's a hate crime. And that's another importance there, because an ordinary murder might be prosecuted. But you can imagine, for example, in the Jim Crow South, when the Ku Klux Klan murdered civil rights workers, Cheney and Schwerner, the government down there in, I think it was Georgia, Mississippi, burning, of course, down in Mississippi, didn't prosecute them. They put them before all-white juries, and the Klansmen who murdered those innocent people were set free. And so what hate crimes laws do, in addition to having more severe penalties for less severe crimes and murder, is it allows the federal government to come in and say, look, state, you're a racist state. Mississippi, you don't prosecute Klansmen, but we here, the United States of government, we care about the murder of black people and civil rights workers, so we're going to prosecute anyway. So we need to come in and get involved in a way that you ordinarily, we wouldn't need to get involved if it weren't a hate crime.
Okay. So you're basically saying is that it's a... some sort of aggravating charge that allows
right.
for a better chance of prosecution.
Well, that's right. And listen, we have aggravating charges all the time. I mean, just to give an example of murder, if you go out and drink and drive and kill someone, that's bad. We call that involuntary
sure.
vehicular manslaughter. You can go to jail for a year or two if you kill someone drinking and driving. If you intentionally plan to murder someone and you stalk them out and you find a way to kill them and kill them, that's first-degree murder, and that can lead to life imprisonment or the capital punishment. So we already make a distinction. They're both murder. It's both terrible to kill someone, but we already make a distinction in the law between accidentally killing someone, doing something you shouldn't be doing, drinking and driving, and seeking out and murdering someone. We make that distinction right now, and we should. I'll give you one more difference in the law. If you punch someone in a bar in a drunken bar fight and they die, that tends to be manslaughter, and you can go to jail for a few years. If you, as recently happened in South Carolina, by the way, where there are no hate crimes laws, if a guy goes to a bunch of gay people standing in line at a gay bar and says, die, F-word, the pejorative word for gay people, and punches someone, and that person dies, well, in the 45 states that have hate crimes laws, that would be a more severe crime. In South Carolina, it was considered a simple assault, and the guy got 1 year in jail. I don't think that's a long enough time. So, yeah, it's an aggravated cause for a crime, and one that I think is justified.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear you just basically being specific here. That was my main concern, because when I hear hate crimes, it seems to go towards the, criminalization of thought or speech, which I don't like.
Well, I, to be very, very, very clear, if you simply preach hatred, that is legal in America. The Ku Klux Klan can legally march in America and has. The Nazi Party can legally march in America and has. You can preach hate. Now, some nations do prohibit that. Germany actually prohibits flying the Nazi flag, largely because we in America have prohibited that for post-war Germany. And so there are certain thought crimes that are punishable. But in America, no, we don't punish thought crimes. However, if you preach hate and act on it, then we do punish you severely than an action that doesn't include hate with it,
okay.
a criminal action.
My most relevant example would be there's a guy, it was within a couple years, he was standing in a public area in somewhere, I think in London. He was a British citizen, and he was quoting Winston Churchill, and he was arrested for hate crimes.
That's
and it was basically,
awfully weird.
It was like an anti-Muslim sort of rant, but he was actually quoting Winston Churchill, and I was kind of thinking that, you know, America could be going in that direction, too, where the guy was, you know, in another first world, you know, Western culture, this guy was actually arrested for the crime of just quoting.
I don't know that example. I do know that in Europe they don't have the same free speech protections we have, and you can be punished for speech. Some Muslim nations, you know, blasphemy, attacking Islam, it can lead to a death sentence. And so I'm going to be very, very clear. I do not believe There are speeches, by the way. I want to be clear. Well, I should be clear. There are things you can say that are mere speech that are crimes. If you threaten to kill someone, okay, someone specific, not generally. If you say, I'm going to kill you, even more particular, I'm going to kill you if you don't pay me $100,000, that would be blackmail, extortion. That is a crime.
That would not be speech crime.
Well, I don't think it is, because I think it's an exception to the First Amendment that's long been recognized and was recognized in the common law, when the First Amendment was written. You can't.
But if you're charged with something, you're not going to be charged with speech crime. You're going to be charged with threatening.
Well, exactly. Threatening to kill someone is a crime.
But it's not speech. It's not the speech is not the crime.
Well, you didn't do anything. I mean, just threatening to kill someone. I mean, people, and in fact, you have to prove that the person wasn't joking. I mean, because people can joke. You know, you say to your son who didn't clean up his room, "I'm going to kill you." Obviously, that's not a real threat. But that's a crime. Libel and slander, by the way, are civil wrongs. If I say that you, John, in Santa Fe, were seen molesting someone, a child, and you didn't, obviously, and I made that up in order to suggest, to harm your reputation and do something malicious, that's a civil wrong. You can sue me in court for defamation. And we all know about the speech, you can't shout fire in a crowded theater unless there's really a fire. So there are things you can say.
That's inciting a riot or something like that.
Well, that's right. That's right. So I just want to make the distinction. Absolutely. But just preaching hatred is not a crime in America. You have to act on it. But
I'm glad we're on the same page when it comes to that. Because some people I think that I've listened to are all in favor of basically making the actual speech the crime. And I just want to make sure that
I wouldn't make the speech the crime, and I would never prohibit someone from flying a Confederate flag. However, I do think that South Carolina should take its flag down. I don't think it's illegal. I think it's wrong. And I think that calling for it to come down is a good thing. And I think that, frankly, in a half an hour, I think they're going to take it down, or at least start passing legislation to take it down.
I'm in agreement with you.
Okay.
As long as, okay, cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Reggie in Georgia on line one. Hey, Reggie, how are you?
How you doing, Mark? Mark Levine. Happy Monday to you, man.
Happy Monday to you, Reggie.
Do you think that Nikki Haley will finally do the right thing by taking that Confederacy flag down and putting it in a museum of history?
I do. Now, and again, she can't do it alone. She's going to require the South Carolina legislature to do it. Apparently, they need a 2/3 vote to do it, although they could actually, if they couldn't get the votes, you can pass by majority vote, changing the law so that the 2/3 becomes a majority, and they could do it that way. But I think it's reached a critical mass. I think by the time you have the governor, both state senators, and the entire world focusing on it, I think it's going to come down. I think the legislature will pass it. I think South Carolina doesn't want to be thought of as the racist hate state. I don't think they want to be thought of that way. Times are different from 50 years ago and 150 years ago. I think it's coming down. I don't know that I would have said that yesterday, Reggie, but I can safely say that today.
Well, why didn't they do this a long time ago?
Well, that's a good question. And in fact, one of the things I'm going to do when we're done talking is play some of the different things that they've said over the years. I think that the Republican Party has for a long time recognized, and you can date it back to segregation era, you can date it back to Jim Crow, and for the Republicans, you should date it back to Richard Nixon, who saw that George Wallace got so many votes in 1968, and he wanted to get the Wallace vote in 72, the racist Southern vote. And so, having seen that Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, he knew, and just as Lyndon Johnson knew, that there was a tremendous Southern white backlash, and that by appealing to the racists, that he could get their votes in the Republican Party. In the 60s, the 70s, this is the time when all the Democratic racist segregationists became Republican racist segregationists. Strom Thurmond, after all, used to be a Democrat. He became a Republican. And the Republicans kept that vote in the party for decades. And for decades, the vote of the racist white Southerner was more valuable, was larger in number than the votes of African Americans or non-racist whites, at least in the South. I think that's changing. I think it's changing because of demographics. Right. I think the number of whites are going down. The number of blacks and Latinos and Asians and other minorities is going up. And I think the number of racist whites has gone down. And the number of whites who can't abide by racism has gone up. yes, I think that's good news. And I think that Republicans are starting to recognize that they're going to stop winning elections if they're seen as the racist party. I think we've actually come some, not the racism is over, but we've actually come away in America. I think Americans are less racist than they were 40 years ago.
Right. Well, you do know that Nikki Haley herself is a Republican, is she not?
Yes.
And I don't know if she's white or mixed.
I think she's Indian American. I think she's Indian American.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, your callman Andrew didn't know she was mixed or what, or white or not. Indian, and she. But if she's Indian American, then she should know exactly how it feels to be discriminated against, being of a different race, and because she's a woman.
Correct? Sure. But I'll tell you something. Even Tim Scott, who's the African American United States Senator from South Carolina, who was appointed. And then later won in a special election. It's interesting that I didn't hear him come out and oppose the Confederate flag until after Lindsey Graham gave him cover. So I think Mitt Romney gave cover to Lindsey Graham, who gave cover to Nikki Haley, who gave cover to Tim Scott. I think no one wanted to be first on this. But
right.
Once they see the momentum, once they see that the country wants this, a lot of politicians are willing to be second and third and fourth and fifth. And so that's why, you know, I don't praise Mitt Romney very often, but I will give him praise
right.
for being one of the first to talk about this. And I think really he started the dominoes falling.
And I'm sure that Fox News is trying to defend the Confederate flag.
It's interesting. Yeah, you know, for the last few days, they have been.
Right.
For the last few days, that's what they've done. When the killing originally happened, there were idiots on Fox News who said, you know, why are they killing Christians, as if it wasn't a racist crime? Now that we've seen Facebook and audio and, you know, the guy, I mean, with the Confederate flag and the apartheid flags, there's no question the killer is a virulent racist who wanted to start a race war. No one's making those stupid arguments anymore.
Right.
But I think that Fox is going to change his tune very shortly, Reggie. I think that when it comes to race, a lot of white Republicans believe in following the herd. You know, even George Wallace. Follow the herd. George Wallace, of course, ran for governor in Alabama saying segregation now, segregation forever. He was removed from standing in the wall of an Arkansas, an Alabama courthouse. It was Governor Falvel in Arkansas. He was in Alabama and he was removed. And of course, the schools were desegregated. But within 8 years, Governor Wallace was already running again. And he repudiated his entire segregationist past and was appealing for black votes. Now, what he truly believed, I don't know. I don't really know what's in a man like that's heart. But I
right.
do know that politically, mm-hmm. he found that racism wasn't selling 8 or 10 years or 12 years later that it was when he was selling it. So a lot of politicians just follow the herd, and I think that's what's happening in South Carolina. And yet I praise it,
yeah,
because sometimes following the herd's the right thing to do, and in this case it is.
And do you think conservative radio talk shows are doing the same thing, defending the Confederate flag?
You know, I don't listen to a lot of conservative talk radio, but you'll have to check that out, Reggie, and let me know. I honestly don't know. I'd be surprised if Rush Limbaugh was leading the way. I'd be very surprised. But I honestly don't listen to him that often, except for when he's attacking me by name. Then I listen. Other than that, I'm not that interested.
Well, I hope they do the right thing, as I said before and earlier.
I think they will. I think they will. That's my prediction today. I think in about 13 minutes, you can turn on your TV. I think the governor and both state senators behind her, I think South Carolina will do the right thing, and good for South Carolina. And by the way, there's still one state, Mississippi, that
right.
still has a Confederate flag above its statehouse. After South Carolina is done doing the right thing, and I think they will, we need to turn our attentions to Mississippi and cleanse every one of the last 50 states of this.
I'm surprised she doesn't know how it feels or what it feels like to be discriminated against since she's Indian American. And
yeah, well, you know, she's also a Republican. And,
yeah.
I mean, you look at a person like Clarence Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly people who should know the pain and don't. And I can't speak for their heart. I really can't.
Right. Well, that's sad.
But,
that's extremely very sad
yeah.
for them. I feel the extreme sorriest for them.
You know, Bobby Jindal is also Indian American, and he's the governor of Louisiana. And I'm going to play some clips when we come back, how he basically said, you know, now is not the time and place for this. We have to mourn the, you know what, I'm tired of anyone who says that now is not the time and place to discuss what just happened in America. If someone gets shot, then now is the time and place to talk about guns. Right. If there's a racist hate crime, then now is the time and place to talk about racist hate crimes. Because we all know what they want. They want people to say, oh, it's now morning time. It's now morning time. We got to be sad. We got to be sad. Oh, a week later? Nope. News is over. Let's talk about something else.
Right.
The parents in Newtown, Connecticut,
right,
to a one, wanted to talk about gun regulation after their kids were mowed down.
Right.
They wanted to mourn, and they wanted to do change. They wanted to make lemonade out of lemons.
Right.
So now is absolutely the time to talk about these kinds of things.
That's what they attacked President Barack Obama for doing last week after the South Carolina shooting.
That's right.
They did it to him.
They did, and Obama has led the way as well. Listen, I'm glad to see these changes happening. I don't want to attack them for being late so much as praise them for having done it. I could attack them for being late because they are late. But when someone finally does the right thing, I think they should be praised. And, of course, we're going to see what's going to happen. I'm predicting this is going to happen in 10 minutes. We'll all turn on TV and find out if it's true. I'm sure Leslie will talk about it if it's true.
Yeah.
But I do think it's going to happen. All signs look good. Reggie, I got to take a break. If you want to stay on, feel free. Otherwise, anyone else who wants to call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine. Conservative who casually misquotes the Bible and the Constitution? Send him to school with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Breaking news in South Carolina. It looks like Senator Lindsey Graham, Senator Tim Scott, and Governor Nikki Haley are all going to call for the South Carolina flag to be removed from the statehouse grounds and put in a museum. This was not what Lindsey Graham said just a couple days ago. Let me play that for you.
Time to stop flying the Confederate flag?
Well, at the end of the day, it's time for people in South Carolina to revisit that decision would be fine with me, but this is part of who we are. The flag represents to some people a civil war, and that was the symbol of one side. To others, it's a racist symbol, and it's been used by people. It's been used in a racist way. But the problems we have in South Carolina throughout the world are not because of the movie or symbols, because of what's in people's heart. You know, how do you go back and reconstruct America? I mean, what do we do in terms of our history?
And what is the answer? What is the answer?
I think the answer is that
relations?
We move forward in a balanced way, that we make sure that the compromise in South Carolina works here, that we look and see what is going on in Baltimore.
The compromise of being able to still fly the Confederate flag because it's part of the proud tradition for some Carolinians.
Yeah, there's a Confederate War Memorial and there's an African American
Memorial.
And
that works for you.
It works here. That's what the State House agreed to do. But you could probably visit other places in the country and there's some symbol that doesn't strike you as quite right.
Okay, so that's really a bit of a cop-out. That was like, well, you know, I'd revisit it. I'm all right with that. But, you know, that was our compromise. And that was the view. That was certainly the view prior to today. But I think, again, the power of social media, the power of take the flag down, the power of Mitt Romney, the former Republican nominee, calling for the flag to be taken down. And yes, above all, the power of an openly racist thug, a domestic terrorist incident, a guy who comes to a Bible study where even according to the killer, he was treated so well by the black folk who welcomed him in to study the Bible with him that he almost didn't do the crime. This makes you rethink. And we could talk about why the other Republican nominees were so cowardly as to not say anything about this. But when someone comes around and starts to do the right thing, it's time to praise them. So assuming what's going to happen in a few minutes is Lindsey Graham and Nikki Haley and Tim Scott are all going to call for removal of the Confederate flag, I say, good for you. Maybe we'll have a new day in South Carolina. This is Mark Levine. Talk to you tomorrow.